Today's deep dive is the 1st of December 2022. Jaipur and colleagues, insulin, ghrelin, and early return of hunger in women with obesity and polycystic ovary syndrome, published in the journal Physiology and Behavior in 2019. What we know, think we know, or are starting to know. In a previous deep dive, we looked into an intervention trial that showed higher levels of the hunger hormone ghrelin in women with polycystic ovary syndrome, or PCOS, following a high glycemic load meal compared to a low GL meal. We highlighted that although previous research is inconsistent in relation to effects of diet composition on ghrelin levels in women with PCOS, women with PCOS nevertheless have lower levels of gastrointestinal appetite-regulating hormones in response to food intake. Ordinarily, ghrelin levels rise prior to feeding but are suppressed in the postprandial period, resulting in a decrease in appetite. Beyond the role of ghrelin in appetite regulation, ghrelin does not exist in a vacuum in the complex hormonal landscape of PCOS. There are ghrelin receptors in the pancreas, and ghrelin plays a role in maintaining blood glucose homeostasis. Experimental research has shown that elevated ghrelin levels inhibit insulin secretion from the pancreas in response to rises in blood glucose levels. Now, with your PCOS hat on, you're now thinking, but isn't PCOS characterized by high insulin levels? And you would be quite correct that most PCOS phenotypes are characterized by high insulin levels. Some experimental research has suggested that women with PCOS, improving insulin sensitivity may enhance appetite regulation mediated by ghrelin. Yet despite some elegant mechanistic work on this topic, no research had, until the present study, examined the associations between pre- and post-meal ghrelin and insulin levels, subjective hunger, and energy intake in response to a test meal. The study recruited 53 women for a cross-sectional analysis of women with PCOS, of which there were 30, and non-PCOS women for comparison, of which there were 23. The aim of the study was to compare the associations between insulin, ghrelin, and subjective hunger in response to an ad libitum, which is Latin for at one's pleasure. This is where participants are free to eat as much as desired. Test meal. Participants ate a fixed standardized meal of 300 calories, of which 73% was carbohydrate, at 9 a.m. before the ad libitum test meal was served at 12 p.m. Before the test meal, participants had blood samples drawn to assess insulin, glucose, ghrelin, testosterone, and also completed a visual analog scale. For more detail on this, see the geek box below. Following the meal, further blood draws and visual analog scale assessments at 15, 30, 60, and 120 minutes in the postprandial period were taken. The analysis compared the hunger and metabolic measures between groups and between the respective postprandial times. Geekbox. The use of visual analog scales in nutrition research. Visual analog scales, or VAS, are common psychometric tools in both psychology and nutrition research, used to measure a particular preference, attitude, or characteristic that may have a range of potential values. For example, hunger and fullness are both subjective and may differ across a range of responses depending on time of day, fed or fasted state, time since last meal, etc. The simple form of visual analog scale used is a straight horizontal line, commonly around 100 millimeters or 10 centimeters in length. The far left will generally represent the lowest end of the variable being measured, and each end of the line corresponds to a verbal anchor, i.e., with fullness, 0 millimeters could be, quote, not hungry at all, while 100 millimeters could be, quote, extremely hungry. Participants are asked to make a vertical line with a pen, pencil, or marker across the horizontal measurement line at a point which represents for them how they feel in response to that question. This is then turned into data the old-fashioned way by getting out a ruler and measuring the point at which the participant made their line crossing the horizontal measurement line. For example, on a 100 millimeter hunger scale, it could be 70.6 millimeters. This is therefore the data point for that time. Imagine this was pre-meal, and then you measure the participant again 30 minutes later. Now it could be 20.3 millimeters, indicating a shift to a more satiated state following the meal, i.e. a decrease in hunger. Visual analog scales can be useful for certain measures that exist on a subjective continuum, rather than using, for example, Likert scales, where participants could have a 1 to 5 score of predefined values, for example, mild, moderate, or severe. In this regard, visual analog scales can be more sensitive to smaller, incremental changes in a particular measure than categorical scales. They are also very simple to use and time efficient for research purposes. They do have certain disadvantages or things to consider, however. They are primarily subjective, which is not a limitation per se, but an important point to bear in mind when the outcome is a variable that could also have physiological measures. They are also validated in very specific contexts, which may not always be generalizable to every circumstance in which they are used. So it is important to think about the validation of a particular visual analog scale, the context in which that validation occurred, and how that context relates to its use in another study. Results. Average age of participants was 29 and 33 years of age in the PCOS and non-PCOS groups, respectively. Average BMI was 35.3 kilograms per meter squared and 34.6 kilograms per meter squared in the PCOS and non-PCOS groups, respectively. Pre-meal insulin, ghrelin, and hunger levels. At baseline, insulin levels were significantly higher in the PCOS compared to non-PCOS group. Ghrelin levels were lower in the PCOS group, while subjective hunger was slightly higher in the PCOS group. In the PCOS group, pre-meal ghrelin showed a moderate correlation with hunger levels, which was not shown in the control group. Ad libitum energy intake. Both groups consumed similar ad libitum energy intake during the test meal, with the PCOS and non-PCOS groups consuming 606 calories and 557 calories, respectively. In women with PCOS who exhibited insulin resistance, energy intake was 759 calories compared to 565 calories in PCOS women without insulin resistance. Post-meal insulin, ghrelin, and hunger levels. Over the two-hour postprandial period, compared to the non-PCOS group, insulin levels were 36% higher while ghrelin levels were 8% lower and blood glucose levels 5% lower in the PCOS group. Hunger levels were significantly higher across the two-hour postprandial period in the PCOS group compared to the non-PCOS group. Women with PCOS showed a significant increase in hunger 60 minutes post-meal compared to 120 minutes post-meal in the non-PCOS group. More on this will be discussed under interesting finding below. The critical breakdown. Pros. The study had clearly stated aims and hypothesis. Women were diagnosed with PCOS according to the defined Rotterdam criteria. The provision of a standardized breakfast to all participants before the ad libitum test meal may have helped to balance hunger levels between groups before the test meal. The test meal itself was ad libitum, which allowed for a more real-world test of how ghrelin, insulin, and appetite may interact to influence energy intake in women with PCOS. The study appears to have met its required sample size estimate for adequate statistical power. Cons. The study was a non-randomized cross-sectional study where participants were divided according to PCOS diagnosis or non-PCOS controls. Given that the investigators still implemented an intervention with the experimental test meal, it seems like a missed opportunity to have increased the methodological rigor of the trial by availing of randomization. The primary outcomes are not clearly stated, although we can infer that they were ghrelin and insulin. The postprandial analysis was confined to a two-hour period from a single test meal, so caution is required against over-extrapolating the findings to effects over an entire day. There were more women in the PCOS group, 30 in total, compared to the non-PCOS group, 23 in total, which may have introduced some bias towards the PCOS group. The results section also begins to discuss a subgroup analysis of participants with insulin resistance. However, this or any subgroup analysis is not mentioned in the method section. Key characteristic. The study appears to have been the first to consider both objective appetite regulatory hormones, i.e. ghrelin, and subjective hunger scores assessed in the postprandial period. And this provides some important insights, limitations of the study notwithstanding, given that there appear to be little correlation between either ghrelin or insulin and postprandial hunger levels. Recall that correlations are represented as R, where R is a measure of the strength of correlation, ranging from minus 1 to 1. Minus 1 is a perfect negative correlation, 0 is no correlation at all, and 1 is a perfect positive correlation. For ghrelin, the correlation was an R of 0.30, which would be a weak positive correlation. This finding is in fact consistent with previous research that has considered ghrelin, which has shown no evidence that lower ghrelin levels correlate to any strong degree with subjective hunger, appetite, or desire to eat in women with PCOS. This is why the key characteristic of the present study is that it assessed subjective hunger, which leads us to our interesting finding from this paper. Interesting finding. The main finding of the present study is also its most interesting result, namely the earlier return to hunger in the PCOS group compared to the non-PCOS group. At 15 minutes and 30 minutes postprandial, hunger levels were similar between groups following the ad libitum meal. However, by 60 minutes postprandial, the PCOS group hunger levels were significantly higher compared to the 15-minute postprandial measure, while in the non-PCOS control, subjective hunger was only significantly different to the 15-minute measure by the final measurement at the 2-hour postprandial mark. Given the lack of any strong correlations between ghrelin or insulin and subjective hunger, the inference from this finding is that women with PCOS exhibited an earlier return to hunger independent of ghrelin and insulin. And importantly, because there was only a negligible difference in energy consumed during the ad libitum test meal, the inference from this finding is that the earlier return to hunger in women with PCOS compared to non-PCOS controls may be evident despite similar levels of energy intake. All of which provides some support to the inconsistent evidence that suggests women with PCOS exhibit some degree of appetite dysregulation. Relevance. The pathophysiology of PCOS is so complex that the idea that there will be a simple correlation that explains certain of the interactions with hunger, appetite, and energy intake is likely to be wishful thinking. And overall, the body of evidence is limited by small trials with an array of findings, often not very robust in their methodological design. Nevertheless, there are some pieces to the overall pathophysiological PCOS puzzle that we may try to link together. The first piece of the puzzle is that it does appear to be a reliable finding that women with PCOS have lower ghrelin levels compared to non-PCOS controls, with the most recent meta-analysis on this question supporting this finding. The second piece of the puzzle is that previous research has also demonstrated a relationship between ghrelin and insulin resistance in PCOS, i.e. that low ghrelin levels correlate with insulin resistance. However, it is possible that a strong correlation between ghrelin and insulin resistance may only be present in individuals with severe insulin resistance. This latter point may have relevance to the findings in the present study, where most participants with PCOS were not severely insulin resistant, and a previous publication from this study showed no significant correlation between insulin and ghrelin in women with PCOS. Finally, what of the last piece of the puzzle from this study? Hunger and appetite. The present study suggests that, independent of ghrelin and with a similar level of energy intake compared to non-PCOS controls, women with PCOS are hungrier earlier after consuming a meal. This is not an isolated finding. A more well-executed randomized trial showed that, compared to women without PCOS, women with PCOS were less satiated and hungrier after eating. Perhaps the lower satiety and higher hunger levels in women with PCOS are independent of ghrelin. However, better designed and larger trials will be required to get a more definitive answer on this question. Application to practice. Is it possible to use the evidence that is there rather than simply say we need more evidence? If we assume that the finding that women with PCOS do exhibit greater hunger and less satiety is a real effect, There is evidence that higher protein, moderate carbohydrate intakes, and front-loading energy intake in the early period of the day may improve appetite while lowering insulin and androgen levels in women with PCOS. This may be a prudent approach to diet, emphasizing the combination of higher, up to 30% energy, protein intakes, in combination with moderate, or 40 to 45% carbohydrate intakes, and low glycemic load carbohydrate sources.